You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. It's the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay.
We just don't hunt great on offense until it's desperation time. And, and we spent a lot of time in desperation time on this trip. It's been a disappointing trip.
Brad Stevens, brutally honest, post-game, not only saying that, but also saying that we're not a well-coached team right now. And it's pretty obvious. So a tough road trip, 1-4 road trip. The only win was a massive comeback over the Phoenix Suns. So a lot to talk about here on the post-game show here after the Celtics lose to the Portland Trail Blazers 194. We're the Raining Jays, John Corrales, Samuel Jamison, Packard the Third, back from his road trip to talk about this, to talk about everything that's going wrong right now. Celtics lose by six. They were down big again. They came back and tied it, but never led in this game. Jason Tatum had a big night, 27 points on 9 of 18 shooting, 5 of 9 from 3, 21 points for Kyrie Irving, which is his average, but on a poor shooting night, 9 of 24, 3 of 10 from 3, couldn't get it going. The big damage tonight was Damian Lillard, but his passing, more than anything, 12 assists, 19 points, yeah, but 12 assists, and Yusuf Nurkic was the big recipient for a lot of that, 18 points on 8 of 14 shooting, a lot of pick and roll damage being done. We're going to talk about all of this here. So Sam, just brutal. And for me on offense, a lot of the same problems. And the reason why we start with this Brad Stevens quote is it's very accurate. We don't hunt great on offense until it's desperation time. And I think that's the most telling thing a coach can say about his team. Even though Brad, after the game, was very much falling on his sword, it was basically the team kind of being complacent until it's time to play hard. And when they get to that desperation time, they really move, they attack, they hit the paint, they kick. It's great. And I guess the question is, why can't they do that throughout the game?
It's a brilliant question. And that's kind of why Brad Stevens, I think, has fallen on his on the sword, because he hasn't seemed to figure it out. But the past three games of the road trip, they fall down. They just have these stretches where they're really bad. Luckily, one of the times was against the Phoenix Suns. They had a crazy comeback. But against the Jazz, they gave up, I think, three 12-0 runs. Tonight, it really just felt like the offense was very bad and extremely bad in the second quarter when the bench came in. And they gave up this big 15-2 or maybe even longer 17-2 run. And they just get down by so many points that it's insurmountable. In the first half, and they've done this the past three games, but just focusing on tonight's game, the defense, it was a little bit startling at first. They just felt like they couldn't stop Nurkic in the paint, which is not something you'd think you'd say, but it was Dame Lillard. It was pick and roll defense, which was something that was also a problem for them against the Jazz, especially with Gobert and throwing lobs. So that was a little bit surprising. But I think they eventually like figured things out. The Blazers did a good job of picking things apart. But in the second half, they played pretty good basketball and started taking a lot more threes and got the desperation. It's just, I don't know why they have to go through so much shittiness to finally start playing hard. It's like, and I tweeted this out during the game, but it's like in the movie Independence Day, where Jeff Goldblum and Will Smith first go in the alien copter and they do it backwards. And Jeff Goldblum goes, let's try it this time without the oops. And it's like, that's what they do every single game on this road trip. It's just like, all right, let's try the second half. Well, you know, with a little bit of trying and not being down by 16. Yeah. I just don't know how to fix that. Like, they had good moments. That third quarter was better. In the first half, they only shot 11 threes. That's just, like, not when they're playing well. When the Celtics are scoring, they're going to be chucking threes. You want us, like, the more threes they're shooting, generally that means, like, they've gotten good looks and they're going to be scoring points. But when you only shoot 11 threes in the first half, that's just an indication of some shitty offensive basketball for the Celtics.
So let's look at this. Break it down half by half. First half, Celtics were down 54-37 at halftime. 2 of 11 from 3, 16 of 43 overall. Second half, the Celtics, 57-46. They outscored the Blazers by 11. They shot 12 of 31. So they took almost three times as many threes, and they hit about 39% of that, 20 of 50 in the second half. So they took a lot more shots, most of them threes, and they hit. The thing is, in the second half, they were attacking a lot more. They were driving and kicking a lot more. Paint touches. It's the same old damn story. I'm sick of doing it. I'm sure people listening to this podcast are sick of hearing me say the same damn thing over and over again. Drive, kick, get into the paint, and then kick it out and rotate. Like, it's the same damn story over and over and over again. So offensively, when they actually get the ball into the paint and then kick and make a couple of passes, they get open shots. Now, of course, right now the Celtics are horrible at making open shots. They are, like, I saw this stat tweeted out, I think it's like 27th overall in the NBA on open shots, and they're like third overall in getting open shots. But at the same time, I think it's all connected. When you
the missed open shots, like, immediately turns, like, the next three possessions are, like, they're just frustrated and they play shitty offense after
horrible,
that.
Horrible. But that turns into bad defense because you're right. They get frustrated and they lag. They put their head down and they don't get back on D. And the long twos that they end up settling for lead to long rebounds and the other team gets out and they break. But at the same time, when they can, when they can just focus and just, even if they're missing the shots, just keep getting the same shots. Just keep that offense going. And eventually things will happen, like Jason Tatum hitting four straight threes and scoring 12 points in a row for the Celtics. Like, that stuff will happen if you just trust the offense and get it to the right guy at the right time. It's not that difficult, but I don't know. I'm just at such a loss sometimes with this team because sometimes they can look really good and sometimes they can just look really bad. I think part of one thing I brought up when they get down and they start settling, their offense devolves not only into isolation, but it devolves into a lot of standing around. So it's almost like the isolation is encouraged. If one of these guys starts going off on an isolation, whatever he's going to do, there's no cutting off ball. There are no picks off ball. There's not even a passing option. So even if the guy starts the ISO and he gets into trouble, there's no place for him to go. He doesn't even have an option anymore. It's almost like once a guy starts the ISO, the rest of the Celtics go, okay, go ahead. And we'll just whatever you do, it's fine. Instead of cutting and being active, and okay, so he's isolating, okay, but if he gets into trouble, it'd be great for him to have an option to pass off to, and then maybe that can lead to a second pass, and you bail him out. That's your buddy, it's your teammate, it's your friend that's right there, and he's isolating, and that defense is too good. Cut, do something, give him, it's almost like in football, when the quarterback is scrambling, and
you got to make a play back to the ball.
Right. And it's like in this version, no receivers are getting open. They're just letting the quarterback scramble. And what good comes out of that? That's what I see from the Celtics right now. It's like a constant scrambling, and no one's trying to get open. No one's even doing anything to get open. So when the offense gets bad, it gets really bad on all levels. When the offense gets good, it can look really good. And like Brad said, it's not until it's desperation time that it can look good.
Yeah, and it feels like they're just like, okay, especially when teams are switching a bunch against them, and so there's not as much action they can create in the pick and roll. Once they've decided, like, oh, they're going to switch against us, our only opportunity is to create some one-on-one, like, mismatches. And then it feels like it sticks out more with the bench. And this is something I think I saw some people talking about on Twitter. Mannix talked about it after the game. Would you, if you're Brad Stevens, consider a rotation switch, maybe putting Marcus Smart into the lineup to just try to change what's going on? Because there's just been consistently, whatever the rotation is, the starting lineup has, well, against Utah, they came out at 10, just like on a 10-2 run. But whatever this rotation is not working. And I feel like it's the bench that is often the lineup in the game that is letting the team down offensively. For some reason, just Smart, Terry, Mook, Baines, I didn't think was particularly great tonight, have not been able to do much. And so I guess there's two questions there. What do you do to solve the bench in their poor offense? And is the possible solution just switching thing around, maybe putting Hayward to be the guy who is the main facilitator on the bench unit? Because I don't know. Something's got to change. You can't score 16 points in the second quarter. That's just not allowed. You can't win basketball games like that.
I agree that you can't do that. I'm going to answer that question after I tell people to go and follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter and Instagram. The Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on both social outlets. Everybody's on social, everybody's on Twitter, everybody's on Instagram. So it's at Locked On NBA Net. At Locked On NBA Net. The Twitter is a feed of every host. Every host is on there. It's curated so you don't get some of the ancillary stuff. It's in-game stuff. It's great. And you get kind of everything from everybody. You get to follow the entire league on a game night. It's great. On Locked On NBA Net on Instagram, you get snippets from podcasts on the stories or on the feed. You get just kind of a taste of everything that's going on. So if you're not ready to follow everything that's going on in the NBA on your own, the Locked On NBA Net has the Twitter and the Instagram. So follow at Locked On NBA Net, Twitter and Instagram. It's really great. And it's really fun. And they've actually taught me a few things about how to do social. So it's really cool. And you should follow Locked On NBA Net on both Twitter and Instagram. So to answer your question now on lineup changes, I'm torn on this because on one hand, it makes sense in the short term to do something. And maybe it's starting Baines, because last year the Baines-Horford lineups were the best defensive lineups. So you can do that and get back to what the Celtics were doing last year to start games as part of their the best defensive lineups. And then offense just kind of works through that. Maybe taking away one guy who's hunting his own shots is a great way to fix the offense. And it's kind of something I suggested in past podcasts, where the Celtics with five guys who all feel like they can get going and who all feel like they either wants to get going or feel like when things are going bad, they can take over. Maybe if you take one or two guys out of that mix and put them on the bench and say, look, this is the best way to do it, and hopefully they can accept it, maybe that's the way to fix the overall offense. And then down the stretch, your closing lineup is your quote-unquote death lineup with those guys in there. So the Tatum, Brown, Hayward, Horford, Kyrie lineup is your closing lineup, but you start with Kyrie, and then maybe it's Smart, Tatum, Baines, and Horford, and then you bring Hayward off the bench to maximize his minutes restriction, and you bring Brown off the bench because he seems to be the guy that needs to hunt his own shots a little bit more. And if you bring him off the bench, he can kind of do that against second units. That's great. I think that's a great idea in the short term. However, on the other hand, does that take away from what you're really trying to do long term? Is the short term fix coming at the detriment of the long term plan? And that's where I struggle with the lineup change. Does the long term plan involve starting the same lineup I said that was closing, or?
I think the long term plan is to try and find something that works. Like at this point, whatever they have right now, I know they're working through it, but and like I guess Brad Stevens will always be like, it's the starting really doesn't matter. It's about who finishes the game and things like that, and everyone gets scrambled up during rotation. So we probably put a more emphasis on this than needed, but just I like the idea of putting Marcus Smart on the court because he's the toughest dude on the team and isn't going to allow them to just like not give the effort that that seems necessary. I think it's just a strictly an energy and effort thing. They have not played a like full 48 minutes game. Maybe the game against the Bucks, you could say they did that, and against this early game against the 76ers, but the energy is not there. And I don't know if it's just, it could be too many guys hunting for their shots, but I don't think it like inserting Marcus Smart into the lineup for however long a stretch of time would really mess with anything. Like, yes, the five guys need to learn how to like score together and play together, but the 10 guys on the team all like need to like all play better collectively. So I don't think there's that much of like a long-term detriment just by shaking things up a little bit to, you know, first we got to work on 48 minutes of solid effort and doing the right thing before we can worry about like the longer term goals. Like you gotta have the building blocks, and they haven't gotten maximum effort as an accomplishment yet.
Jim, what's the one word that we keep talking about with this team?
Incremental progress, Kaizen. I don't know.
Kaizen
featured prominently in the Celtics advertising scheme.
Right. Process over results. So if we're talking,
they haven't nailed the process of trying yet. Like that's step one, folks.
Right. This is where I'm struggling. This is why I'm struggling. The process over results. What's the right process? The results right now suck. The results suck. But if we're talking about process over results,
the process sucks too. Or at least that second quarter process was garbage.
Right. But at the same time, how much of this is like, let's talk about the missing open shots. They miss open shots like crazy. If they make open shots like this game that they lost, a close game by six. Now, granted, the first half was not great. They were down five after the first quarter. The second quarter sucked. As usual for the Celtics, by the way, second quarters suck for the Celtics. They have for like 3 years now. The Celtics come out in the third quarter and they make it close. They tie the game in the fourth quarter. So we're at a point where they were right there and they had opportunities in the fourth quarter. They worked the ball around and they actually got open shots that they missed. If they make some of these shots that they missed, that I don't know if they win the game, but they might have gone to overtime or whatever. It would have been closer. So
they played very well in the second half. They held the Blazers to 17 points in the fourth quarter. I thought Kyrie Irving came out and played some like great defense to start the third quarter. They outscored the Blazers by 11 in the second half. Like that's the most frustrating part is you see they have all this like potential to be good.
Right.
You can't dig yourself a 16 point hole as they did the past three games.
Right.
And so that feels like a process or a trying thing. You can't keep doing this in the first half. And it just doesn't make sense why
they
stopped there.
So they got down 20 points in each of the last three games and they came back in the Phoenix game, the 20
points. Kind of came back against the Jazz, but not really.
Kind of, sort of, but that was a different game. They came back in the Portland game. So the Portland game, I think, mirrored the Phoenix game to some degree in that they made the comeback. They just, if this was the Suns tonight, they would have won this game. If they played Portland on the Phoenix night, they would have lost that game. You know what I mean? So, but my point is Portland's good, and you can't come all the way back from 20 down or 21 was the biggest lead that against a good team like Portland. They're a good team. So, but they started okay. So is the lineup change at the beginning the answer? The biggest problem here is they lost the second quarter 28-16. If we're, you know, bringing it down to like a super micro level, the question is, I guess in that second quarter, how do you fix the second quarter?
I wish I had a better answer. You've seen Brad try a number of different rotations where it's sometimes it's earlier in the season, it was Hayward playing with the bench to kind of start the second quarter. Then it's Tatum playing with the bench. Then it's Hayward and Tatum with some members of the bench. We've seen Jaylen Brown. It's not like Brad's not trying a number of different kind of lineups right now, but there's nothing that's been settled on of like, here are the guys for the first 6 minutes. Now we're going to take them out, where they've gotten a consistent amount of play. And it's almost nonsensical. For how a team can look this bad and this good in the same game. You mentioned like the things that could have gone their way. Like, this game was close. Al Horford was bad tonight. He was still fine defensively. He had some blocks. He had some rebounds, but he was 4-14. And he missed all five of his threes. Some of them, it didn't look great. So if you get a more typical Al Horford performance, who knows, maybe they have a better chance. But to answer the problem about like, how do you fix the second quarter? It feels like a mental issue at this point. Like, I don't understand how the talent that Brad Stevens has can be like put together, and not produce a solid basketball team, or like solid play. At some points, the offense is good and the defense is bad. And sometimes the defense is good and the offense is bad. Tonight in the second quarter, both the defense and the offense were atrocious. But I don't know. There's no easy solution here. I think it's like it really gets down to they need to like lock in for 48 minutes. They need to just like commit to doing like the little things, commit to like extra movements on offense. Just like it needs to be 48 minutes.
It does. Okay, before we continue here, I want to send a message out to anybody here who owns a business and is looking to get more customers for your business. This would be a spot where I would normally read your ad right now. I would be reading your advertisement, but I don't have it. So you need to contact us at LockedOnCeltics@gmail.com. If you're looking for a new way to reach customers, your company could be mentioned right now, and podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors that they hear on their podcasts. I want to be clear about this. Your radio podcasts are not hitting the right demographic. Our demographic is 98% men with more education and earning than traditional media audiences. Look, it makes sense. People who listen to podcasts have to have a device that they can listen to their podcast on. They have to listen to it on their way to a job. They are doing things that's why they have the time. They have the money. They are a more affluent listening audience. It's 98% men with more education and earning than the traditional radio audience. So if you are a company that's looking for advertising impact for your dollars, contact us.
If you want smart, rich dudes with money, that's who we talk to. That's what the stats say.
That's it.
I bet they're very attractive too. If you want an attractive customer base, come to us, the Locked On Celtics.
Very good looking people. It's very attractive, probably with nice eyes. Like Al Horford.
I would hope so. If you don't have great eyes and you listen to us, stop.
No. Nice eyes only. Just delete us. No. LockedOnCeltics@gmail.com. LockedOnCelticsPodcast.com, LockedOnCeltics@gmail.com to advertise with the Locked On Celtics podcast.
I just want to start this next one with, I just saw this come across the Twitter. Marcus Smart addresses the team after the game and says, there's no more excuses. And that's basically at the point I'm at, where it's just like, you can break it down on the analysis, but eventually this need to play and just be better. Like, I don't know what, like, it seems like an effort thing or a commitment to the details or something like that. But no, if Marcus Smart's just going to, maybe that's why you put Marcus Smart in the lineup, because he's like, he feels like the leader on the team right now.
He does. I'm not going to deny that there is a potential for a shakeup. And I'm certainly not even advocating for one or the other at this point, because obviously if somebody had an answer, that would be implemented right now. And I'm not going to pretend that I'm smarter than Brad Stevens or that coaching staff or anybody in the Celtics organization. So I can't sit here and say definitively, you should do this. I know that's how it's supposed to go. When you're in the media, you're supposed to definitively say things. Maybe they should. But again, process over results. Maybe Brad Stevens, and we've gone through this before. Brad Stevens is also tinkering. This is experimentation time. October, November, December is when he gets all of his data. It's when he says, okay, we're going to start these guys. We're going to see how it goes. Maybe the lineup change is as much just let me gather data with this other lineup and see how that goes. And then in December, January, I can figure it out. Brad Stevens' teams almost always, and maybe always, they take off in the second half of the season. So it's imperative that we don't get so caught up in the day-to-day. We, the media, the fans, get so caught up in the day-to-day. The coaches, the front office, professional sports franchises, they do not get so caught up in day-to-day reaction. We're all frustrated listening to this show. Right now, you're in the car or in the shower or whatever. You're listening and you're pissed off because you woke up after another Celtics loss after a tough road trip. The Celtics, the coaching staff, they're not overreacting the same way. They're taking a much longer term view.
Can't get too high, can't get too low.
That's how it goes, man. That's how it is. So look, the Celtics have problems. They got destroyed by guards penetrating on defense. The biggest thing, and we haven't even talked about the defense, we're so focused on the offense. Guards destroyed the Celtics defense. Damian Lillard picked the Celtics defense apart on the pick and roll, got 12 assists because he got through the first line of defense. The back line of the Celtics defense had to come up and help. And then Nurkic was open. Al-Farouq Aminu was open. Boy, I messed up syllables on that one really bad. Al-Farouq Aminu was open twice late in the game, and he hit both threes, which is a killer when Al-Farouq Aminu is killing you from threes. But they defensively, they're allowing way too much guard penetration, and that's just destroying the entire defense. The role man is just getting anything he wants, and if that guy's not open, the defense is overreacting to the role man, and it's a kick out to three, and it's one pass, and the Celtics defense is just a complete disaster after that point. And that's why they're getting down 20. And then the offense has to kick in. So the offense is a result of this bad defense. And on top of everything, their defense isn't getting a chance to set itself because their offense isn't hitting shots. They're not even getting a chance to run back. They're coming back in transition all the time. It's a mess. The entire thing just feeds itself.
I like how you were talking about don't get high, don't get too low, and then you just talked yourself into a frenzy about how shitty the defense was.
Frenzy. It's total. But that's it. But that's what we do. We get too high and we get too low. The team has to not get too high and get too low.
I thought the good point about guard penetration. And like that's been a major problem for the Celtics this year. And then the thing is that the pick and roll defense the past two games has been not great. I actually thought in this, and I don't know. It feels like when the Celtics are able to switch, they're a much better defensive team, and that's obvious. I mean, that's why you switch everywhere. You don't have to be in rotation, and thus it's less open shots. But the pick and roll defense has not been good, and it feels like, especially when they trap the ball handler, the roll man, you're right, is basically Rudy Gobert had many easy alley-oops, and then Nurkic early on. I thought they were more active defenders and more aggressive in the second half. I thought Kyrie was not great early, and then came back and was just harassed the ball handler more, and Kyrie ended up with five steals. But I think maybe that's we talk about guards being able to penetrate the defense. Maybe that's a reason you put in, like, you play more Marcus Smart minutes. It's just he's going to be your best kind of defender of guards and bring that intensity and not make it easy for anyone. Maybe, like, I don't – now I'm just, like, randomly hypothesizing here, but is it like Kyrie being the main defender that's allowing all this? I don't think it should be blame solely on Kyrie, because the Celtics do a lot of switching, and so a lot of the times you'll see Jaylen out there, or sometimes Hayward, or sometimes Tatum. But I don't know. I thought they played a little bit better in the second half. They were more aggressive. They got more steals, but the pick and roll defense has not been great, and that's not something we'd be used to. In November, they have the 25th worst defense in the league after being the best in October. That's insane.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. There is still time. There is still time. So before we hit Twitter, I want to read this one quote from Kyrie post-game, which is really interesting. Quote, right now, I think it would be nice if we had someone that was a 15-year vet, a 14-year vet, that could kind of help us race along the regular season and understand it's a long marathon rather than just the full-on sprint. It's an interesting quote right there. Part of me says that Kyrie... you don't have to be a 15-year vet or a 14-year vet. You can be what's Kyrie, a 7-year vet? Like, you can be or Al Horford. What, I mean, how many years has Al Horford been in the league? I'm looking it up right now. This is his, what, 13th season? Yeah, this is his 13th season. So Al Horford's supposed to be that guy that Kyrie's talking about.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, psychoanalyze this right now. He is basically, like, it's a little bit of a cliche as soon as you start going into a race metaphor, and it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I guess he's basically trying to say, like, we need someone like the – my Jam's armchair psychoanalysis of this quote is that, like, they're playing a little too – or they're too concerned about it. They're like, if it's a marathon, not a sprint, everyone just needs to calm down and, like, play steady. I don't know. It kind of seems like just a random Kyrie cliche, but, like, maybe the young players have been not handling their roles well enough. And so that would be like Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, Jason Tatum. But I don't know. It's hard to read into what Kyrie's saying the majority of the time.
Yeah, I don't know. This is Al Horford's 13th season, so it feels like.
But he didn't say 13. He said that's why they need a 15-year vet.
Two more years is going to be a big difference.
Well, he said 15-year vet or a 14-year vet. Right, so, right. I mean,
the 13-year
next year.
Vet's not right. Right.
Well, 13's an unlucky number. I mean, I feel like Kyrie's into numerology.
True. Uh-huh. Couple of quick tweets here on the Rain and Jays before we get to the junk drawer and reading junk. At Echoes of Nile, your thoughts on the Celtics road trip? I feel like we're getting to the point where it's not acceptable to play this bad, this consistently. I'm not saying they need to be at 100% all the time, but they should be doing better than they are. At Micah Angelo, similar, at 1-4 on the road trip. Milwaukee and Toronto look good. Philly did a thing. There's no easy walk to the finals, but we have Kaizen. Am I right?
Well, Kaizen's always right. Kaizen has never failed us. But I think let's go back to the marathon, not a sprint metaphor that's very convenient for this moment. How many times do we say the season doesn't start till Christmas? They've played a lot of games. It feels like every Christmas we say the season doesn't start till Christmas. We say this is the opening game. I think there's a lot of time left in the season, and we mentioned Brad Stevens experimenting and figuring things out. I think everyone needs to take a deep breath, listen to us, do some rage yelling in your car. Maybe honk at someone today. I was driving to New York. Everyone was honking. It just felt cathartic.
You were driving in New York? What is wrong with you?
What part of New York? I was driving up the West Side Highway.
Ugh, God.
It was not fun, but... no, but I just started honking at people for fun because I was getting honked at for no reason. And I figured, hey, no, if there's no reason, I'll just start honking. It was a blast. Yeah. So if you need to just like express your rage that way, but eventually you need to come back to a more centered place and realize that the Celtics team is still quite good. They're going to figure it out. And we're not even at Thanksgiving yet. The season is not even started yet because that happens on Christmas. So I think that the Celtics will end up being okay. The other part of that question from Michael Beloy, I think we should just talk about, is Jimmy Butler trade. That happened.
that did happen. So yeah.
I'm not worried about it at all. Like, it's interesting. I think it makes the 76ers a little bit better, but it's like they decimated their bench. They gave away two starters for Jimmy Butler, who's very talented. I am in no ways trying to say that Jimmy Butler is not good at basketball. But there's like two guys in Covington and Saric who can shoot the three and stretch the floor a little bit. Dario is basically the only actual power forward, or was the only actual power forward on that roster other than Mike Muscala. I just don't know what it does for the Celtics or the Sixers bench. The Butler doesn't really shoot threes. So what do you do with Ben Simmons? And Butler is a known bully who's going to say terrible things to Markel Fultz and Ben Simmons. I just think it doesn't move the needle for me. It's great because the NBA is awesome, and I love that the East is competitive now, but I just don't think it moves the needle for the Sixers.
It's really, really interesting. He needs to be a good soldier. The first thing here that we need to understand is he needs to be just as accommodating as possible, because by getting traded, Philly now has the right to pay him for 5 years, not four, to get him that 8% increase, not 6. He stands to lose a ton of money. And really, when you boil down to what was happening in Minnesota, it kind of was always about the money. And so he needs to, at least for this season, play as nice as he possibly can.
Can you see a situation where the Sixers aren't going to re-sign him after giving up Covington and Saric?
If he comes in
wearing a shoot a three coward shirt and is like just yelling at Ben Simmons, then yes. Yeah, I can't imagine it's going to be that bad.
If it's close to that, then yeah. Like he can't come in treating Simmons and Fultz the way he treated Towns and Wiggins. He just can't. He has to be much more accommodating for the next 6 months. Like that's just. He has no choice. He has to be super nice because they can sit there and say we kind of have this commitment to pay him those big the big contract, but they do have a few months to say, okay, we screwed up and we're not going to screw up our team anymore. We're not going to re-sign him because he came in and he was a dick, and we're not gonna keep him around and have him be a dick to the two guys, especially Simmons and Fultz, maybe even more so, who is so fragile at this point that he's finally starting to show some promise, that you can't have a guy come in and just completely decimate his confidence. So he has to be nice, at least for this season. So,
but can he be nice? Like, here's the thing. You trade away your two starters. Basically, they have to start like Fultz, Redick, Butler, Simmons and Embiid now. Like, I can't imagine what their other starting lineup would be unless you're going to go crazy with TJ McConnell. So is he going to be able to put up with Fultz's like development and just the fact
that he has no choice. He's
a known jerk.
Yes, but he has to until he gets his contract. And that's, and
it's not like Philly's the easiest place to play. Oh, if it goes sour, here's how I think it goes sour. You know, all the rumors out of Philly are that like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are like they don't really get along. Not that they're like enemies or like they even have as much beef as, but they're like not great friends. Right. We need Jimmy Butler to go in there. I feel like he's going to side with Team Embiid, and they'll tear apart the locker room as Fultz and Simmons are on one side and Embiid and Jimmy Butler on the other.
Sounds good to me. It's possible.
We need to fester some hatred. A civil war among the 76ers is what we should be going for.
They're all active on social media. I'm sure there's a social media strategy. We could look at the the Russian. Never mind. I'm not going
to
get.
So someone needs to send the Shoot a Three Coward shirts to Jimmy Butler.
Absolutely. That dude was waving a towel in Golden State with Warriors fans when he was, like a week ago. So,
you know what I'm excited for, though? The season opener on Christmas.
Yeah.
when we first get to see Jimmy Butler in his Sixers uniform.
Oh, man. I think that Butler will try his best to fit in as best he can because his agent is not stupid. And his agent says, if you want to get that $5 million max contract, just do your thing now. Just do it now and just relax. And then later you can do whatever you want. Once you get your 5-year deal, then go whatever. So I feel like for this, and I don't know what that means for this season. It hurts their bench. It definitely creates potential spacing issues. Saric was having a bad year shooting from the three, but he's a good 3-point shooter. Covington was having a good year from three. And look, two guys that were good going away to add one guy who's great. Yeah, that helps your starting lineup. It does hurt your bench. So we'll have to see right now what that does for Philly, what that means. Does that change the hierarchy in the East? I think right now we're at a point where Toronto has established itself as the clear number one. Then number two is up for grabs. Milwaukee right now is playing really, really well, and they're number two, and they deserve to be number two. If the Celtics can get their shit together, then they can get to number two, and then Milwaukee and Philly. Philly essentially, I think, with this trade, rises up into that Milwaukee conversation 3-4. Maybe they get up into that competition for number two. And we just have to wait to see if Toronto kind of comes back down to earth at all, or if they just keep rolling through the regular season. So that's how I see it.
You know what's wild is that, like, if the Celtics beat the Raptors on Friday night, where we completely feel differently about the entire year.
Absolutely.
Now it's just like, oh my God, 1-4 road trip. It's terrible. But like one win against the Raptors, and everyone's like, oh, best team in the East.
If they come out on Friday night and play a complete 48-minute game and beat the Raptors at home, then the narrative completely shifts and it becomes, look, the Celtics are bored. They're come out like they're once they have a challenge in front of them, a real challenge in the, something that they have to face directly come playoff time, then they're awesome. And then the conversation shifts a little bit. Let's not get too crazy. I have a fear about what's going to happen in the Chicago game. First game home after a road trip is always a kind of a beast, but you're right. If they come out and they just, at least play hard and put a solid 48-minute effort together against the Raptors, then, yeah, the narrative shifts for sure. Okay, junk drawer.
Feels like raining junk time.
Yep.
It feels like the junk drawer. All right. So I thought I had some junk tonight. It felt like a junk-filled evening. Already mentioned the Kaizen being prominently featured in the Celtics ad. I feel like I built this. I don't get enough credit, but I'm the only one who's ever noticed the word Kaizen. Aaron Baines had a nice braid going on tonight. I thought he looked nice.
I like that braid.
Oh, I decided to do a verbal meme that really made me laugh, and this one's directly from the Riffs man. It says Dr. Cloctopus, and then it's
that was so awesome.
It's the Time Lord.
Dr. Cloctopus is so goddamn amazing. I'm like, I can't.
Let me describe it for the listener gods out there. It's Robert Williams wearing cool shades on Dr. Octopus's body, and then Dr. Octopus is destroying Spider-Man, but instead of Spider-Man, it's just a basketball for the head, and then Dr. Cloctopus is saying, "For this time," and it's "For this time, you die," and it's the Time Lord. It's just that was my first attempt at a verbal meme. Junk drawer is something I've wanted to do for a while, but I think it's a great thing. The memes need to return to the Celtics, and so I'm going to be doing verbal memes in the junk drawer. Tatum Length was back. This guy's going to the basket left and right. Remember Tatum Length? That was a thing I loved to tweet all last year. First time I did this season. I love him going to the rack. Of course, Aminu hits a three. That's from earlier in the game, but I think it was 2 years ago. He just killed the Celtics with threes. He feels like one of those Celtics killer. Every team has them, but he hit one from 30 feet to basically end the game, and is very frustrating. But I think the real – and I'm shocked we haven't talked about this so far, but the real story of the game, if we're following A, B, C, A, the Celtics sucked in the first half. B, the rim was ajar during halftime. And C, the Celtics got much better. The rim was ajar. The basket was ajar.
Right.
Like, what the
hell?
What is that? I've never seen that before. But it did produce a lot of Scal and Mike Gorman just trying to fill dead air, which I was endlessly entertained by. They had a lot of good talk about home improvement. Scal seems to know a lot more about power tools than I thought he did. That was just fantastic stuff. And it really felt like it changed the entire energy of the night. The fact that the Celtics that it happened and it was so absurd, and then the Celtics started playing good. I'm not going to say they're connected. I just did, but I'm not going to officially say it. But that was just a fun, probably the most fun I had in the evening. That and Tatum hitting four threes in a row.
Yeah, I'm with you.
1,000%.
Feels it. The rim thing was fun. Kind of weird. Yeah, I got nothing to add.
Aaron Baines did it with all of his strength. All right, Marcus Smart had another one of those crazy Marcus Smart plays where he came up with the offensive rebound. Cobra is happening. Oh, we haven't even talked about my mainest man, Daniel Theis, coming in and playing after
that was shocking.
He broke his foot, and he comes in immediately. The Celtics plus eight. Like, Theis is great. I didn't realize how much I missed Theis. He was very active on. I thought he was a large reason they were playing better defense in the second half. He was a lot more active. They could switch things. They didn't have to, because he has the foot speed to kind of switch out on guards and do a better job against them. Glad to have Theis back. Theis, well, what if Theis changes everything? Maybe, what if he's the straw that stirs the drink?
Could be.
Could be. We will see.
I don't know. Maybe.
It could happen.
I know that he sends the Time Lord to Portland, probably.
Oh, yeah. And then that gets us more Time Lord footage. Right now, we're getting minimal Time Lord footage. I think it's the best of both worlds. And then finally, to finish out the junk drawer, Evan Turner had some real shitty turnovers in the second half, and it feels so much better to be on this side of that, just to watch, to be able to benefit from the Evan Turner turnover party. I'm a huge ET fan. He's one of the funnier quotes in the league. His podcast with the Low Post was on Zach Lowe's podcast was great. But it's just fun when he was throwing dumb passes and the Celtics were benefiting. It's like, oh, I remember that. I remember that decision making.
Yes, that was. Yeah, I'm with you. The only thing I have to add was that the image of Gershon Yabusele as the timeout, like just staring off into oblivion with his mouth slightly open, tongue hanging out a little bit. It was just really hilarious that he was just lost in this moment. And just, I don't know what's in his mind. I don't know what's going on there, but it's really funny, especially with that green NBA headband on. I don't know. The whole picture just fantastic.
Yabu's created a lot of bench moments this year. A lot of good stuff. Less on the court, but a lot of good reactions. The other night, he had a crazy reaction while Brad had like no reaction at all. I think it was a Kyrie dagger. Yeah, it was the Kyrie a three against the Suns, and Yabu's going crazy, and Brad's doing nothing.
Nice
Yabu should just hang out on the bench, and just there should be a camera on Yabu at all time. Yabu cam. Oh, absolutely. My God. Max Lederman, I know you got something to do with production over there at NBC Sports. Yabu cam. Yabu Let's cam. Get a guy.
That'd be big. Okay, man, we had a lot to get to. We have gone like 20 minutes past what we're supposed to do, but it's a super
long. It was a long weekend, long road trip, a lot of games. I mean,
frustration all over the place.
I'm running on fumes right now and just jabbering a mile a minute, but it's felt good to get it all out, guys.
No, we had to.
Everyone listening, just take a deep breath. Start your Monday off in a positive headspace. Kaizen. Never get too high. Never get too low. Celtics will be better next week. Tomorrow, all you can do is improve.
That's it. Look, it's early. It's mid-November. I felt like this podcast is as much therapy for me as it was putting a show out for everybody else. You get all of that frustration out, and now I can sit back and be like, okay, you know what? It's okay. It's all right. It's okay, baby. Be cool. We're going to
be cool, baby.
We're going to be cool.
Everyone's got to chill. Yeah.
Prince. Everybody just relax, have a drink. It's Massachusetts. Weed is legal. Go smoke, do an edible, whatever you got to do. Whatever it is, man. Be cool. We're going to be fine. We're going to get through this. So
the season doesn't even start till Christmas.
Yeah, we're like a month away from the actual season. This is basically preseason. So
please play better, Celtics.
God help us if they don't play well against the Bulls. God, just beat the Bulls
Just beat the Bulls.
Just beat the Bulls. All right. That's the podcast, everybody. Thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed this extremely long Monday cathartic therapy edition of the Locked On Celtics. If you are a first time listener, really want to thank you for sticking with us through all of this. If you've made it through 50 minutes of this podcast, then congratulations. You should be subscribing. You should just hit the subscribe button wherever it is. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, we're everywhere. Any place podcasts exist, we are there as well. So subscribe. Regular subscribers, go ahead and give us that 5-star rating, write a good review, and share the podcast. When people ask, what should we be listening to? You tell them the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.